Welcome to Sporting Life with Sam Kekovic and Leon Wigard. Sam, it's been a wonderful week for women.
A wonderful week for women and a wonderful week for Australian sport. And to see Ash Barty and, of course, Jamie Carr in their particular disciplines, just absolutely rise to the absolute pinnacle. It's fantastic.
Well, take them one at a time. Now, Jamie Carr, from our guest later on is David Hayes, and of course he's a South Australian, and so is Jamie.
Yeah, racing royalty, but Jamie Carr, 100 winners in a calendar season, it's phenomenal, and to see her rise, which is predominantly still perceived as a male-dominated sport, she has just excelled. And if you speak to individual trainers like I have over the journey, they'll all say the one constant is that horses travel for her. She's got a wonderful eye, she's got a wonderful judgment, and she's got a good seat in the saddle. So
that would be the main reason you'd speak to the trainers, though, to find out how Jamie Carr became so good. There'd be nothing else in that.
Oh, look, if we've got time, Leon, I'd ask them, do you like anything?
You got a special one for me.
Yeah, but a muffle isn't noise, so no one else can hear it, just in case, you know. And, of course, Ash Barty, well, the one denominator they both share is their great humility. You know, they were understated, they were bringing at their craft, and to see Ash Barty and where she came from, she walked away from it for 3 or 4 years, played with the Brisbane Heat in cricket, didn't think she was going anywhere, came back, so understated, so natural, with great grace, and particularly in an environment now, in the sporting environment, where you see, this piggish behaviour, this entitlement, it's almost cringe factor, and to see these two beacons stand out on and above, not only in terms of performance, but in terms of the demeanour and the manner in which they've accepted. It's so refreshing, and it evokes some fond memories, Leon, in those great days when you ruled the airwaves. Remember those, our great sportsmen, the Hodes, the Newcombs, the Margaret Smiths. All of them, in every field of sport, the one thing that was associated with all of them was grace. Win, lose or draw, everyone did it with enormous grace. And the one thing Australian sport was recognised universally was highly competitive, tough and hard, but extremely fair and graceful.
Well said, old boy. Yeah, very well.
Well, I was, and that's why you gravitate to those people. Then you look at the other side of the spectrum, guys like Kyrgios and those, where, you cringe, you say, mate, take a leaf out of the Barty book. You can do so much for yourself. But they don't,
It's not a bad thing. You want a bit of everything, You need some bad boys to say how good the good people are, really.
Look, it's bad boys. I'm all for a bit of colour and a bit of,
Well, you were one.
Yes, but I was also well-mannered, Leon. I said, yes, sir, thank you. I was never belligerent to the extreme, where I was denigrating or defiling or demeaning of my opponent or of the game itself, I don't think, to a degree. I may have transgressed a little bit, but predominantly I had that in the back of my mind. I wasn't a nasty person. But I understand a bit of flair is wonderful, and to be a little bit unique, by all means promote that, and we promoted that. But when it gets to a stage where it becomes, cringe, well then, surely. But more strength for the girls. The girls were outstanding. Women, we do salute you. And you've got two great icons and two great inspirational figures.
And some very good results from overseas for our golfers. And about humility, most of our golfers really handle themselves very well in that department. And the two guys that, I think it was two or three, won in the last couple of weeks.
They did. I watched the Scottish Open. Lee won that in the playoff. I think it was a three-person playoff. He won that, Scottish Open. And then the week before... Scott Hen.
Who won that?
Anyhow, it was another Australian. I watched them all. I've been up all night. I've been nocturnal. I've been watching golf from dusk to dawn.
And where Lee won was the Renaissance, and that's
Renaissance. Yeah, the Aberdeen.
That's just down the road from Muirfield, so it's on the north. Lothian coast. That's a fantastic golfing area.
Well, you've travelled there extensively, Leon, with all your golfing.
Yeah, that's where George McNeil lives.
Does he, George?
He's down there. That's a Flower of Scotland man. Now, our guest today, is joining us from, no, he's back from Hong Kong.
He is.
Sitting, curling his heels at the moment because he's in quarantine. But he could have been an athlete. In fact, he was an athlete. He was a triple jump champion of South Australia, went to the Australian Championships, came third. But it was he was absolutely born to be a racing trainer, wasn't he? As his father was and as his sons are. And I'm referring, of course, to a good mate of yours, and mine for that matter, David Hayes. Good morning, David.
Good morning, fellas. Nice to be on the show.
How are you, Davey? I know you're in quarantine now. You're just back from Honkers and... I do believe we caught you on the treadmill. How's it going, those calories?
Well, the treadmill I got put in the room because it just kills a bit of time. And I'm just trying to run and jog 12K, so I'm pleased to be on the show. It gives me an excuse to get off it.
So you're back from Hong Kong. You had a 12 months were nearly up, I think, 12 months of the day you left last year.
Yeah, I left this time last year without a. We had 12, with due to COVID, we had 12 months without travelling home. So, really excited to be home, looking forward to seeing the kids. My daughter is pregnant and due to have a baby, so our first grandchild. So, I can't wait to see them all.
So, just quickly, just for the benefit of all of us, 12 months ago, you got a call from the Hong Kong Jockey Club. They needed to fill the void there with a prominent trainer of some repute, not some repute, wanted with a big name. Of course, you'd been to Hong Kong previously, won the premiership there a number of times. How was it this time back, this time round? Did it take a bit longer than normal to settle in? Or?
Look, because of the COVID, when I got my appointment 6 months before I went there, normally you go to Hong Kong a few times and set everything up. But this time, I just arrived for the season and probably... took on a few local horses that I shouldn't have, and they were a pretty ordinary bunch. And then, of course, predominantly my whole stable was full of new imports. And they generally take 6 months to 12 months to acclimatise. And so I had a bit of a slow start, but I finished up, I was the leading trainer in April and May. And I think for next season, now I've got rid of a lot of the underachievers and got new horses in, I'll be pretty close to the top next year, I think.
Be a prominent player. So, David, just quickly, how does it work in Hong Kong? You're there by invitation, you're allocated X amount of horses, and can you, do you have the, do you have a licence to bring horses in of your own bat, or it has to be ratified by the jockey club?
Yeah, well, it's, you go there, you're a contractor to the club. They supply all the staff, they supply the stables, and then the owners get a permit to own a horse, and then they're in charge of sourcing the horse and giving it to the trainer. So they normally appoint a trainer and ask the trainer to buy them one, and then those horses come in. But once that horse is no good, they have to reapply to get another permit. So when they get a horse, it's quite a big thing for the owners, because it's about a 1 in 5 chance of getting a horse. So there's more owners than horses, in other words. So it's very, very healthy. The thing that's different from Hong Kong to Australia is if you've got a horse struggling in Melbourne, you take it to Ballarat or you take it to Bendigo. In Hong Kong, they have to race in that class. So sometimes you're running horses to drop in class that are out of form. But if you keep them in form, and only run them when they're in form, they never drop and they never win. So it's a bit of a juggling act. It's a true handicap system.
Yeah, and of course it's very well policed as well in Hong Kong. I don't think, well, it's been well documented, those that engage in skullduggery are found out very rapidly, and if they're fortunate enough, they escape back to their homeland. Otherwise, they meet a terrible fate.
Yeah, look, if you're caught speeding, basically you're not welcome and they kick you straight out. So the people that are there would be very silly to take shortcuts. And I think if they had that attitude in Australia, there'd be a lot less cheats.
David, the attitude of everybody around Hong Kong and the difference you see now with the latest, if you like, hardline or more hardline that the mainland's put on Hong Kong Have you noticed there's any change in the population, the way they're going about their daily life this time around?
Well, they don't protest as much, which is a good thing. the protesting, you know, free speech is terrific, but when they're protesting that much that they're stopping the economy of the city, I think something had to be done hard line. And what they did has absolutely stopped it overnight. But, you know, there are whispers that some of the outspoken locals aren't very happy. But look, for me as an outsider working in Hong Kong, it's very much the same. There's just not as many probably expats or English there.
Oh, suffice to say, I think the hardliners have got a few methods of deterrence up their sleeve, which would preclude some of the locals from protesting as often as they would like, without going into too much detail.
Jail.
I think jail would be the soft option. I think you've got to think of
it. David, it's almost 30 years since you took over Lindsay Park from your great and late father, and it's been some 30 years.
No, it's been terrific. I got put in the deep end, a bit like my boys are at the moment, but I was ready, and I was young, similar age to my boys. And look, it was because of Dad's poor health, but look, I had 5 years training with some of the best horses a young trainer could ask for, and then went to Hong Kong for 10. Then I came back for 14, and now I'm back in Hong Kong. So it's been a lot of fun and a lot of winners and not too many hard times.
David, I guess I look at the first time you went over to Hong Kong. You're very fortunate you left it in the hands of your late brother, Peter, who was a very, very accomplished trainer in his own right. You had a great 2IC in Fantasy. Then you had McAvoy. You had a terrific... you know, 2ICs in charge and almost in a very, very accomplished trainer in his own right. So really, you didn't miss a beat. Yeah, Lindsay Park ticked along nicely. You were in Hong Kong, you know, strutting your stuff. This time it's a little bit different. You've got the young guard on. You've got your Ben, who's also a very accomplished operator, a very young one. You had Davinick, your brother-in-law, also there. But... it's not quite as smooth sailing at the moment because you've gone through that transitional phase where Davinick's now left. We want to pursue a succession line of his own for his kids, I guess. Ben and his your other brother, your other son, sorry.
William.
William, taking over the reins.
JD.
Yeah, you call him JD, sorry. On the surface, from a perspective outsider, you'd look at it and you'd think, oh, it just lacks a bit of glue at the time, but it's probably further from the truth, is it?
Oh, look, Gary Fennessy, who's been working in the business for 50 years, is still there. He's been the one consistent. Ben's been training in the partnership with me before I left for 5 years, so he's not actually underdone. And Tom's left, which was a bit sooner than we expected, but the plan was always to promote JD at some stage. He's a very capable young trainer. He's been around the business all his life, of course, living with me. All we ever do is talk horses and football. And I would say they're both ready. JD's the same age as I was when I started, and Ben's more experienced. So I don't think haven't got too many concerns how the horse will be trained.
I guess the small point I wanted to raise, and I know you very well, but a lot of people always like to deal with the commander in chiefs, for want of a better term, and they'd feel a bit uneasy. Are you noticing people feeling a little bit uneasy dealing with what they perceive wrongly? That, you know, dealing with underlings as opposed to dealing with the chief?
Well, they are the chiefs now, so it's a bit like a new coach coming into a footy team. All those fears are taken away once they start winning. And so I'm not at all concerned. I know they'll start winning and it'll be business as usual from the outside. On the inside, I'm very comfortable.
Let's get some comparisons going here, David, between you and, we call him JD. Is he the one that played for the Bulldogs?
That's Will.
He's the identical twin. He played VFL for the Bulldogs and coached at Euro. He's a good footballer, but didn't really want to do it as much as the one that's with the Bulldogs.
Which is Will. Will's the one with the Bulldogs now.
Oh, he's still there. So Will outranks you because you played in a premiership, I think, for Centrals, was it? Under-19s?
Yeah, under-19s and a year in the reserves, which was a much higher standard,
of course. Don't start him on that. He had no career. In fact, the great story was a David Hayes football story. I don't know if you've heard it. His father took him to the game one day, and he has a temerity after the game to sit in the front seat alongside his father, and he said, "Dad," he said, "how do I go?" He said, "Son, Monday morning at 3 a.m, you muck that stable out and you start making racing your career. Because if you've got any illusions of being a footballer, you will be broke." Is that what Dad said to you?
You don't wreck a story for a fact, Sam.
No, that's right.
But Dad did say to you...
He said that, what do we tell the owners if we've got a city class horse? And I said, "Oh, good, and you know, hopefully you can go to Melbourne. What do we tell them if they got a country horse? You should get rid of it." He said, "Well, you come and work for me."
David, what happened to your career in triple jump?
Oh, there's a fella called Gary Honey. It's just jumped.
Oh, yeah.
There's not a lot of money in triple jumping, but a lot of fun to be had. Competing and travelling, so I enjoyed that athletic. I used to go running 400s as well, but I was never going to get a living out of that, but it was a good chapter of my life.
Lindsay Park, God, it's synonymous with racing. It is racing royalty. You mentioned Lindsay Park and people immediately know the history of it. But the transition to Euroa, you know, you've spent a fortune over in Euroa. You sold off Lindsay Park in Adelaide. And how is the Euroa project?
Look, Euroa is terrific. It's fully developed now. It cost an absolute fortune. I spent $21 million on the facility, 24, I think, now. And it's finished and it's a freehold set up. So we just need to get a few more bums on seats and it'll be functioning wonderfully. But I got out of Lindsay Park, South Australia, for the reason that I just thought the gap between when Dad set up Lindsay Park in Adelaide, the gap wasn't that much between Adelaide Racing and Victorian. And I could see the gap widening, so I thought I'll bring up all my kids in Melbourne and we'll make ourselves a Victorian-based. I think I picked the trend pretty well because the gap has even gone further between Melbourne Racing and Adelaide Racing.
I looked at the Google for your promo on Lindsay Park, Euroa, and it's most impressive. Very, 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 very good.
It's based on all Dad's ideas at Lindsay Park, Angaston and the Prosser Valley, just with a few new improved ideas, and I'm sure Dad would have done them if he took Lindsay again. Whenever you develop a property, you often think, gee, if I had the time again, I'd do this. He didn't make many mistakes, but there were a few things that he wasn't happy with at Lindsay, and I was able to make those subtle changes at Euroa.
How many horses you got
in Hong Kong?
In Melbourne, in Australia.
There's probably 140 in training at the moment, and about 60 spelling, and it was double that 12 to 18 months ago. So, you know. In a funny way, it's better for the boys that they're not training a massive team.
Right.
And I think as they build into their job and hopefully have a bit of success, they can gradually build up. Sometimes taking on a huge team looks good on paper, but it's not the best thing.
And in Hong Kong, how big is your team in Hong Kong? What's the normal standard?
Yeah, it's sealed at 70. The thing about Hong Kong is the biggest a trainer can be is 70 horses.
Right.
And where do those horses come from? You said that the owners in Hong Kong obviously have the import horses, but some come from Australia, I know.
The majority of horses come from Australia. Australian horses do very well there. But New Zealand, England, France, Germany, Italy, Argentina, not so much America, but basically anywhere in the world that's got a fast one. Dubai, Japan, it's a melting pot of horses from everywhere. Because they don't have any breeding, so they buy them from where they think you can find the best horse.
Well, it's normally renowned that the best jockeys ride in Hong Kong because they're by invitation. They're normally the best. What about the quality of racing? How would it rank, say, against Australia?
I think it's bottom and mid-strength depth is well ahead of Australia. And at the absolute top, I think they're pretty similar. Then occasionally, in the old days, Australia didn't used to have the imports they have now. Where there's a lot of imports coming to Australia. Hong Kong always had the imports before Australia. So the top end, when I was there last, I thought Hong Kong was superior. Now I think it's pretty similar.
What about prize money?
Our equivalent of a maiden or worse, our Bendigo Class 1's are worth about 180,000 Australian. And our average race is probably close to 300,000 Australian. So, no, the prize money's terrific.
And the betting's huge, no doubt.
Yeah, they're betting, I think, about 25 million Australian a race. So to put it in perspective, I think that's what we bet on the Melbourne Cup. That might be, but we do that from every race, every day.
I know they're big on principle and ethics, but... big on principle, but do you, I know you've got some very prominent owners, do they often come up to you and say, David, if my horse can win, there is an emolument there or a slight stipend or a gift of any description?
It's all case by case, Sam. But, you know, if sometimes you've got an owner that enjoys having a bet and you get it right, you can sometimes get a nice bonus on top of your wage, which is very nice.
What's the best gift you got, you reckon?
A Bentley.
A Bentley. Mr. Yip?
Mr. Chu.
Tell us that story just quickly.
What happened, this was a long time ago, but I had an owner that wanted me to set his horse up to win first up. And he kept coming to my stable in different cars, feed his horse carrots. And one day, he arrived in a V12 Mercedes, and we would go and have yum cha after. And I said, I think this is my favourite car I've ever been in. And anyway, we were having the yum cha, and his translator said to me, "Can Mr. Yip's horse win on the weekend?" And I said, "I think he can." And they just put the keys in front of me and said, "If he wins, this is your car." And the horse won, which was fantastic.
And what did you do after yum cha?
I went and slept with the horse for a week. Pretty thought I'd gone missing, but it was. I figured it was pretty important, so I lived with the horse basically.
Not a bad gift, I had a V12 Burke.
That was one of 4,000 wins over the 30 years or so, including 95 Group 1s. So ask your football night quiz. What's your favourite win? So there must be a couple that stick out.
Oh, I'd better loosen up. The only Australian horse to win in Japan. We know how good the Japanese are now. When he won, that was the richest race in the world. That's probably one of the highlights a long time ago. Of course, the Melbourne Cup. Everyone wants a Melbourne Cup on their bucket list with Jern. They're probably two of the more obvious. So Miss Finland winning a slipper and the Oaks in 12 months with the Guineas in between was a big thrill. They're probably the main ones, I would say. But, you know, there's lots of not-so-obvious thrills. You know, when you get an expensive horse win a good race, it's always a big thrill.
Just moving on, Sam was asking you about Lindsay Park. Where did that name come from originally?
I did miss one that gave me a huge thrill, Boom Time, winning the Caulfield Cup because I owned him. He was a long shot winner in the Caulfield Cup.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, Boom Time probably right up there.
I remember Boom Time, yes.
Leon, I missed that question.
The name Lindsay Park.
It was called Lindsay Park when Dad bought it.
Right next to your lumber.
Yeah, and he just maintained the name. It was the most famous cattle farm in the district, and he kept it. He kept the name.
David, what about stable jockeys? I know your father had Michael Clark. He had the you know, the most prominent jockeys of the time are normally associated with the big stables. But in your case, you you tend to turn them over. They don't, you don't patronise them like they used to in the old days. Would that be fair to say?
I think everyone's the same. You know, I had Michael Clark for, had great success with Michael Clark for 4 years of my first five.
Yeah.
But I, look, I tend to find that you get more luck in races when you use lots of jockeys. I always found when Michael was riding, there were a lot of jockeys riding against him, and now you find that it's a lot more free, the riding, because they're potentially blocking an opportunity if they're, you know, riding against.
Yeah, I understand, yeah.
Riding against. So I like the freelance system. Because when a jockey's in form, they're the cheapest investment. And if, with a stable jockey, like tennis players and all sportsmen, they have their downs and outs. And if they're your stable jockey, you've got to put up with their outs. So when you don't have a stable jockey, you just move on to the next one. When you don't think they're riding in the good form, and you can always go back. And so that's always been my philosophy. You just look at the top of the premiership and try and get those guys.
Can I ask you another question? Apart from your view, what are your views on the health of Australian racing, and what do you think of the weight scale? Should that be elevated, or are you quite happy where they stand?
Oh, look, I just feel the population is getting a bit bigger, and the minimum probably could be lifted another kilo, make it easier on the jockeys. But it's pretty well right, I think, Sam, the weight scale. It just needs, you know, little subtle changes and probably weights to go up a little bit.
Our guest on Sport and Life is David Hayes, who's back in Australia from Hong Kong. David, while the patriarchs have both passed away, the Hayes and Sangster families are still very, very close.
Yeah, I was talking on the phone to Adam 10 minutes ago. A great friend, and looking forward to catching up with him on his magnificent stud when I get out of jail. So, yeah, Robert was my biggest owner when I started, and Dad's biggest owner, and was a great friend of the family. So without Robert Sangster, I don't think Lindsay Park would be where it is today. So yeah, he was just a great owner and mentor to me.
David, on your way to Adam's opulent property, which is called Swettenham Stud, you'll bypass a winery there.
Both sides of the road.
Yes, which is called Mitchelton Winery.
Mitchelton,
which is owned by a very good mutual friend of ours, Jerry Ryan.
Yes, and what a great job he's done with that property.
He has, but
he's turned it into a world-class facility, hasn't he? And it's just fantastic.
Well, Leon and I are now just imbibing in one of the great red wines called The Print. But what I'm saying to you is Leon and I are now owners of a very prominent horse that you trained for us called 50 Stars.
We are
in that.
When do we get into that?
Well, Jerry gave us a small little, we got half a
tail. Not 50
tail.
Stars, it's the other one, Furion.
Furion, sorry, I wanted 50 Stars, but I got Furion. Sorry, I got mixed up. I thought this might go live to Jerry. So we've got Furion, which we just got beat by a very, very small margin, but hopefully it will win a good race for us. But anyhow, I know you've got long connections there with Jerry, got a number of his horses there. So things are looking well for you, boy.
Yeah, well, 50 Stars won an Australian Cup, which was a huge thrill, and Furion won a Warrnambool Cup. So, we did well with them.
Now, tell me, how long are you in Australia for? You're overlooking the Empire?
Probably 3.5 weeks once I get out of quarantine, but I'm here for 5 if you count quarantine.
Now, Prue left earlier. Prue was back in town, the matriarch. She's overseen the Empire, no doubt.
Yeah, she's been very busy with all the change at Lindsay Park that's been going on, and she's been helping the boys sort everything out.
So will she stay back here, or she'll go back to Hong Kong with you?
Oh, no, she'll, after Sophie has her child.
Yes.
She'll probably help Sophie a bit for a month, and then she'll come back to Hong Kong.
David, just before we let you go, I know you've got so many things to do. Look at the four walls.
I don't study.
Carbine Club had a horse running by, trained by David, and it wasn't much good, as it turned out. But it was in that period where you were selling Lindsay Park and also at the same time developing a Chuka. And
Euroa.
And at that time, we also hit a very major financial downturn, and things weren't going so well. And you're really quite concerned for some time. But did that work out okay for you?
I don't know. It worked out very well in the end. But at the time, I was developing Euroa and bridging, expecting Lindsay Park to sell quickly, and it took a couple of years to sell. But once Lindsay Park was sold, the bridging financial costs, the pressures got taken away, and it looked after itself. So I'm pleased to say Euroa's finished now, and we're all freehold, and financially we're fine.
David, just from a layman's perspective, what would Euroa be worth, and who would buy Euroa if it was up for sale?
Look, you never say nothing will get sold. I never thought Lindsay Park Angaston would get sold, but at the moment, I certainly hope it doesn't. The kids love it, and I think it's a superior training facility. I don't know what it would be worth, Sam, but I think it would be worth a lot of money, and there'd be always someone that would want a world-class training facility. But I wouldn't have a clue what it'd be worth, and don't think about it because I don't want to sell it.
Why did you pick that area?
It was interesting. We looked at a lot of areas, but I wanted a place with good water, because you need good water for the horses to drink and the pastures, and more importantly, the grass tracks. And I wanted a place with nice rising hills, and I wanted a place that had easy access from the Hume to Sydney.
Yeah, geographically. So,
and geographically just ticked all the boxes for me. And I think I chose the right area. I'm very, very happy there.
Because you have to commute, I meant to say, when you look at a stable like the CS Hay stable, you obviously target the big races, the group races, and you've got to have access to Sydney. You're nearly halfway there, not halfway there, but you can ferry your horses equally across there or to Melbourne or to any part of the globe.
Well, whether you love Sydney or hate Sydney, you can't ignore Sydney. Their racing is...
Yeah, you've got to be there.
Some people argue it's bigger than ours, but I don't think it is, but... I much prefer Melbourne racing, but you have to compete in Sydney.
Indeed so. Now, on that note, Leon, I think we might let him get back to
his treadmill.
Treadmill. He's got, what about his breakfast? He's got, Eggs Benedictine and avocado smash, rashers of bacon.
And a glass of print.
Eggs, that's all they give you.
And a glass of print. I bet you got a bottle of
and
print in there. We might send some Mitchelton wine. Oh, we can't get it into you.
Can't get it to me.
Can't give it to you, no.
David, before we get you go back to Hong Kong, we'll certainly catch you at Mitchelton with Jerry. Yeah, not far, of course, from the training venue. And
45 minutes it is.
45 minutes, well, that's worthwhile, and about 15 minutes getting home.
Yeah, well, we must catch up for lunch for sure when you get out. How long you got? You got another week or so to go?
I'll be out today week.
And tomorrow, of course, is Happy Valley.
The last meeting for the season.
It is, and I know you've got a winner, but we won't discuss it now. I'll talk to you shortly. See you later.
All right, Sammy.
David Hayes joining us on Sport and Life, and we'll join you again next week.